after a few workarounds. So, my name is Peter Karlsson. I've been with Sun for the last 17 years or so, except for 1 year where I worked for the evil empire, and they are evil. Hence, I now work for the good side, where we do open source, and so I'm going to talk about D-Trace, Web 2.0, and things like that. And now I need to figure out how this works. Okay, click on next. So, why should you care? An introduction to anybody here? How many anybody here used D-Trace before? Okay. So, how many of you guys have used D-Trace before? So, the few of you can. You're pretty good at D-Trace. You know how it works. But for those of you it doesn't work, short introduction to D-Trace, what it is. D-Trace and Ajax, what are the different Ajax things? And so on and so forth. So, first of all, why should you care? A lot of people think like D-Trace is a Solaris thing. D-Trace is only done in Solaris, but no. D-Trace is actually available on OS X, BSD, and other operating systems. It also something that's been implemented in a lot of scripting languages. JavaScript, Java, PHP, Python, Ruby. There's a guy here in Australia who works for Sun who actually done a shell. A provider for D-Trace, you can D-Trace your shell scripts. There are D-Trace provider for Postgres. They're going to be D-Trace provider in the next release of MySQL. So there are lots of D-Trace providers for things that are surrounding the whole Web 2.0 sort of or Ajax hype or whatever. So, introduction needed. D-Trace was introduced since Solaris 10. I mean, not going to port it back to an early release. It was a major rework to get it in there. It allows for dynamic instrumentation of operating system and applications. And this is it's a dynamic framework to allow you. So what it actually does is, when you're not running it, there's no code in your code path. When you are asking D-Trace to enable a probe, D-Trace will put a probe into the code path. And we'll check if that then's happening, then we'll validate if that probe should fire and collect the data or not. So when you don't use D-Trace, there's no performance penalty whatsoever. Traditional probing frameworks usually have a fairly large penalty by just enabling the frameworks. It comes with a dynamic language called D. For those of you who have used D-Trace, you're probably familiar with it. It's slightly looking like C with the twist of awk in it. And the idea here is to have something that is familiar to people so that you can quickly come up and start it. For those of you who haven't tried D-Trace yet, and if you want to get a quick start, there's something called the D-Trace Toolkit available where you can download, and there you have a lot of different different scripts for different things, like for JavaScript, for Perl, for different type of scenarios where you want to look at system times, when you look at what's happening on IO side and sort of things. One of the key designs with D-Trace was we wanted it to be something you could use in a production system. So you don't have to worry about performance and safety. It's safe from the way that you can't do anything with D-Trace that endangers the system safety. There are something we call destructive actions in D-Trace, but you have to enable destruction actives specifically to allow D-Trace to do things like stopping other processes, sending signals, executing other processes. You have to tell D-Trace to specifically do that. And there is a setting in as a system that you can disable destructive actions completely on the system. So you as a system administrator, you can basically disallow anybody from doing anything that would be bad to your systems. We also looked at how are we doing things like tracing and other things, or profiling. We usually collect a lot of data from different tools, and then we run some post-processing scripts or import data into some spreadsheet or whatever to make it visible, to make it understandable. Because usually you get a lot of data out of your framework. So what we looked at that was, to provide primitives in the D language that allows you to make data digestible for you as a human being. So you can consume the data as you get it. So you can read the data, you can understand it. So we added something called aggregations into the framework that allows you to do that. And since we are collecting data in the kernel, we also try to see to that we don't save data that is not necessary. So things that you don't specifically ask us to save, we're not saving. Just goes away. So you have to specifically ask the DTrace framework to collect data for you. Otherwise, it's gone. Because you're running in the kernel, you have limited space. That was the wrong key. So the idea here is to be able to, you usually have this kind of squirrel or wheel at your hamster wheel that you're running through. You're having a hypothesis. What the problem is, you're doing instrumentation to your code. You're writing the instrumentations, right? Printf statements or println statements or whatever type of instrumentation you're putting into your applications. You gather the data, you're analyzing the data, and you get to a new hypothesis, and you redo this again and again and again and again. One of the basic ideas of the DTrace is to be able to don't have to do the instrumentation phase. I don't have to put instrumentation into the code. Instead of using that, I have a scripting language that I can control instrumentation and ask, I want to have instrumentation at that line of that function in my own code, but I also want to look at what's happening in the system calls beneath that. So I want to look at that and that and that and that together. And I don't have to add code into my application or into anything else. So what's happening there is basically you're tightening the loop and you can spend more time of doing actual analyzing the problem and trying to understand the problem and less time of inserting and quality assurance of instrumentation in your code because you don't have to do that. Not that one. So in a nutshell, this is how the framework works. There's a DTrace, basically a device driver or a kernel module called the DTrace modules we have a virtual machine engine that executes on that. There's a library, the libDTrace, which by the way, is not a public library. It's the APIs that is going to change. There's a Java API that is a public API that if you want to write your own consumers to DTrace, use the Java API. Because that's guaranteed to be stable, and we're basically doing the matching of the changing APIs in libDTrace with the Java, hiding that from in the Java API. So what's happening, most of the time, you will use the DTrace command and the DTrace script interpreter that interprets the D scripts. It interprets D scripts into a semi-compiled language, sends that semi-compiled kind of bytecode down to the DTrace engine. The DTrace engine then looks at your script and looks at, okay, you want to have that probe enable, you want to have that probe enable and that probe enable. And then it goes to the provider that owns that probe and tells the probe, insert a probe there, insert a probe there, and insert a probe there. The provider then goes and inserts actually hot patches the code and inserts code into the code path. Then when you're running the code, your code comes here, execution here, and you hit a probe point. The execution then is turned over to the DTrace framework. The DTrace framework then looks at if you have a condition, whether or not you should collect the data. If you are supposed to collect the data, it then runs your stored action script in it stores the item script and stores the data for you in its buffers. And then when it's done that, it returns the transfer control back, which of course then has some limitation what you can and can't do. The DTrace consumers, if you look in Solaris, we're actually implementing some of the user space commands like lookstat and plookstat using DTrace. So what they are doing, they generate DTrace scripts and then send them down to the DTrace framework and collecting locking information both in the kernel or in a process space. That's basically how things works. The D language, as I said, the C-like language, kind of like to Oak. We have global variables thread local variables and probe local variables that you can specify. There are a number of built-in variables that you can use to sort of say where you are, exec name, timestamp, probe name, and a few other variables like CPU, ID, thread ID, and other things. Predicates are used to be able to tell whether, if you hit a probe point, whether or not you should collect data. This is something that is important because even though if, then, for, and so on are reserved word in the D language, as of right now, we don't have any flow control in the language. If you want to do different things in different circumstances, you have to write different predicates and then have the same probe description, and they have different predicates, and then you have different action statements. Actions to trade data, so you can do different things to trace the data, collect data on different things. Providers, it's basically the method how we do instrumentation. Providers controls the different probes. A number of different providers. We have a print provider that you can use with C, C++ applications. Hotspot, a DVM provider for Java. There's a JavaScript provider for JavaScript. There's a Postgres provider for the Postgres database, and so on and so forth. There are a number of providers that are interesting. From if you're looking at the application in a systematic way, like the IO provider, the profile provider, and the system provider, it's interesting for us to understand what's happening behind our application. So think that you're having an application running in the browser, you're doing a click, it goes into an application server, it goes to database, and you want to know where to actually spend the time. With dtrace, you can actually trace the application from the whole path down to what's happening in the, basically do the write to the disk. So the language format kind of looks like this. You have a probe description which tells you, in this case, I want to look at all system calls in the system. The predicate then is exec name equal to bash. I want to look at any system call in the system that is executed on behalf of a bash command. And then what I want to do there is my action statements. I just want to print out that probe function was called. Basically, that's what this script is doing. Of course, the script can be more elaborated than this. Aggregations is something that we're using to be able to make data more digestible. If you just print out or you collect all of the things and you just dump the data out in raw form, you have to do post-processing. So aggregations allows you to do post-processing in the script directly. So we use that to look for larger trends. Aggregation we do like now count, mean, max, average, quantize. And maybe there may be key band and arbitrary tuple of data. The way you write is you have an at sign, the name, the keys you want to have, the argument functions, so on and so forth, and the arguments. You have two versions of quantize. You have a power of two quantize or a linear quantize. So you can either have a power of two or a linear distribution curve of data. This is an example of a quantize. So instead of just dumping out all of my memory allocations, I can see kind of a graph that displays where what the different sizes are of my memory allocations and how many of each of these allocations I've done in an application. This is a very, very simple application. It is, I think it's Who. And as you see, the script is even simpler to do this. It's very, very simple. And if I look in an application, I can do this. One way I actually do it a lot of time when I'm trying to find, for example, memory leaks, is that I aggregate call stacks to memory allocation and to freeze. And then I try to match the allocation with the different freeze. So I can actually see the different call paths I've done to different memory allocation to points in code. So I can see which way I've come to a point where I allocate a new object or something like that. So you can do it, you can aggregate on a lot of different functions and different things. Calculating time spent. This is one of the things we do the most times. You usually want to profile things. We want to figure out, where do I spend time? Where should I try to find an optimization? Where should I look to optimize my code? Do I spend time in my JavaScript? Do I spend time in the Tomcat engine? Do I spend time in the database? Where do I spend time? So in this case, this one is looking for system calls, and it looks at open and return, close and return, and it prints, basically calculates the time that is spent. But I put a bug in this code. You're a geek, so you should be able to find the bug pretty quickly. I need to track it somehow, but not on the file descriptor. You have to remember, we are all operating systems today are multi-threaded in themselves than they are. So you can have multiple calls in a system call at the same times. So you have to do things, you have to trace things on a per thread basis. So what I can do here is I can use what we call a thread log using a thread local variable. So if I use a self and then the variable name, now it's unique to this thread. And one thread can only be in one system call at the same time, which means that the time stamp I have will now be unique for my thread, and when I calculate it, it will be unique. It will be correct how much time I spend in that. And that is actually useful both when you're looking at JavaScript code or you're looking at any other code. It's usual to keep track of which thread is doing things. The thing that you're looking at here is not the file descriptor. You're looking at the thread. So it's not the file descriptor that's triggering the system call. It's your thread that is closing the file descriptor. If you wanted to trace... So what happens if I open it on one thread and close it on another thread and another thread?
It tracks the open and...
It tracks the open and close. Doesn't track the system. Doesn't track the file descriptor. If you want to track the file descriptor, you could do that as well.
So I'm trying to find out how much time I'm spending in open and close.
Yeah. In this case, I'm just trying to find out how much time I spend in open and close. Yeah, you can do that by using you don't have process local variables because you're not running in the process. You're looking at per thread, but you could do that by using a PID as part of your predicate. Either or.
Yes.
It's both. But both cases.
Is that what your bug is? Is that, you
know, the bug in the previous page is... The bug here is the fact that if you have one thread coming down here and another thread coming down, so it's either time slicing or preemption. That will get you, because if one thread comes in here and another thread's come in, like if you have, if it can even be like you have multiple CPUs.
You're measuring the time that you're off the CPU as well, and not just the time that you're running in the function.
No, we have different times of times, but in this case, we're measuring the actual elapsed time, not the ticks you're on. But we have another timestamp that you can measure the ticks you're on CPU. But even if they have multiple CPU, in that case you can have two calls that is in the open system call at the same time. They're running on different CPUs.
So you can have different tick sources, different.
Yeah. And oh yeah, of course, okay. Of course.
These are all problems.
No, they're not problems because they are. A lot of those things are hidden from you, that you as when you're looking at it in this level, you don't have to think about where the tick comes from. You only have to think about, what do I want to know? And we can give you the wall clock time, we can give you the tick that you're actually executing. So we have different times on four, depending on what you are looking at, what you are interested in measuring.
But if I do a printf, then I'm doing IO, which means
No. you're not doing an IO at the time you're collecting information. The IO is done later. So you are collecting information, and then at a later point in time, when dtrace can run in uninterrupted, it will send data up to the consumer. It will be through a pipe. It will be through an open pipe, so it won't see an open or close. So dtrace is not hiding a dtrace from itself. So dtrace, you can actually use dtrace to trace dtrace, which we actually done to figure out some bugs in the development. It's fairly flexible in that way. If you want to track the time spent per PID or per thread, what you could do then, if you just want to look at a specific PID, then you use it in a predicate. If you want to track it on, you want to see how much time are spending in the system call, and I want to see that aggregated per PID, I create an aggregation, and I use as one of my keys. I use the PID as part of the aggregation. And that when I print the aggregation or when I exit the script, I will print out a list of this is how much time I spent in these functions for this PID, for this PID, for this PID, for this PID. So you can do it in a number of different ways, depending on what you are interested in looking at. So if you're interested in many PIDs, then you would use an aggregation to store the data per, as a basic associative array per.
I assume that you can nest the predicates for a single prop.
Now, if you want to have multiple predicates, you can have multiple probe for one predicate. But if you want to have multiple predicates, you have multiple action statements on it, so you have multiple instances of the same, which is the way it's been chosen to implement right now. Let me continue here. So we've done that. Built-in variables. This is now some of the built-in variables. How amount of time? A little bit. So dtrace for scripting language is kind of the interesting things and where we see a lot of development happening right now. So PHP and JavaScript are kind of the two big ones. If you're interested in trying with PHP, we have the PHP version that comes with the cool stack, which is the optimized version of the LAMP stack for Solaris, has a dtrace enabled PHP that comes with, so it works out of the box. I almost got that compiled on Mac OS X last night, but so looking at PHP to get it, you can either do per or Peckle to get and then you build the dtrace, you build the extension, then you add the dtrace.so to your PHP init file and so on. Wes Furley has some more information about the banking trail, some also cool things. There are two. This is a very simple provider right now. They're looking at try to implement a stack dump as well, but right now there's a basic support to do profiling, function enter, function return. You have the arguments, you have arg0, arg1, arg2, arg3, so basically function name, file name, line number, class name, object, and so on and so forth. So this is an example of very simple. It's prime number calculator, and you have example. And this function here would just look at the number of times certain function have been written and called. So it will aggregate on the function name, and it will count the numbers per function. So that's a very simple way of seeing. Okay, this is the different function, so that I can see where the hotspot in an application is. It's a very simple thing to run very quickly. 10 minutes.
For questions, and then 10 minutes of questions.
Okay. So on this case, I'm running this. I can see which function, and I dash divide is the one that's the hot prompts. If I wanted to look at those optimization, I would go and look at that one. JavaScript. it's been added into the Mozilla code base now, so it's part of the using the Mozilla Dtrace framework. We're actually working with the Mozilla people to get more providers put in there as well. So it's a couple of experimental ones looking at networking, so we can figure out why does Mozilla do all of these DNS lookups and things like that. But the JavaScript, so we execute start, execute done, function enter, function return, object create start, object create done, object finalize, and there are actually some garbage collection and some layout management. Props as well. So in this case, if you wanna just look at the function flow, this would just do create a function flow, basically an in-and-ended front-end flow of your application. This is actually using the old version of the script, so it should be instead of trace Mozilla with JavaScript function entry, and then copying string, copying in the function name, and we'll print out function name. You will see the indention of the. And we can't do that since I'm running Mozilla, so I'm running the wrong operating system. Postgres have dtrace as well. If you want to play with it, there's two ways of doing it, depending on how much you want to hurt yourself. I'm lazy, or actually I like to do so many other things. I try to avoid doing things I don't have to do. So I got the latest version of Solaris, which I kind of get once a week or something like that. The other way, you can download the source, you can build it yourself. You can do that for MySQL and Firefox as well, if you're. Postgres has the following transaction start, transaction commit, transaction abort. So we're looking at primarily looking at transaction and locking. And one of the interesting aspects now, where we started to talk together with the different open source database communities, see, can we come up with a standardized probe set for databases so that we could have the same sort of set of data probes for MySQL, for Postgres, for SQLite and other databases. We can have the same set of probes for the whole set. Right now, there's one set of probes for MySQL and another set of probes for Postgres. So we try to see if we can get that a little bit standardized.
Excuse me, are you talking to Firebird?
Think they are sort of on and off talks, but not much talks to them right now. We kind of more pick up on people that are doing probes and talk to them than we try actively trying to find and try to get people to do, because there's so much other work. So what we're basically trying to do through the Open Solaris Dtrace community, we're doing support and discussions with the different communities. They set up now a sub-community in the Dtrace community, so it's a database community, so that should be up and running in a couple of days now, and we should be able to. So if you're interested in that, it would be something that if they are interested, we are interested in talking to them. It's something that is unique. Dtrace is a framework that is, it's not unique for Solaris. It's available on Solaris. It's been ported to BSD. It's in the main code base. So you have to compile. You can compile it on any platform. You have to just do, I think it's enable dtrace in your build process in the autoconf. It differs in different how they set up their build environments, but in different build.
Sorry, this might be a silly question. Is dtrace in Linux or the imported
Linux? That's an interesting question. No, and likely not. there are licensing philosophical licensing differences between the OpenSolaris community and the Linux community, and there are I don't say either are right or wrong. I say there are advantages in different sides, and depending on where how you look at there. So we are using a CDDLSR license, which is okay with BSD, the BSD license, for example, but it's not okay with the GPLv2 license.
Since quite a lot of us are probably deploying this sort of stuff on Linux environments, do you find that there's much difference between, like when you run Dtrace on a supported platform, one of the platforms that runs on, in terms of where the performance bottlenecks are? Like, for example, I know on FreeBSD, certain C functions are quite expensive, and XML libraries sort of run reasonable amounts slower on BSDs because of that.
I don't think it's been out long enough to done any major differences. We've been able to find bottlenecks on applications on Solaris that they've been sent, then been, for example, then been ported back to Linux, or other things. And one way of doing that is we can actually run Linux binaries unmodified on Solaris, so we can just look at them that way. But any major performance differences between platforms, thanks to Dtrace and things like that, I don't think it's kind of a little bit too early in the game to sort of any major differences.
Okay.
I think we haven't set up other tools that we've been using sort of to benchmark things to figure out where we have bottlenecks previously called libmicro, which is a very, very good benchmarking tool to be able to figure out where you have different bottlenecks. I need to rush on a little bit here. Can I take the questions after a few more slides? let's skip that. This is a sample of basically looking at the different servers and see the different response times in different servers. And one thing I would like you to sort of see here in the script, most of the scripts are very, very short. They're very simple. So you get a lot of data by a very, very simple script. And you see here, we're using a tick provider, basically. That one is basically giving you, doing things every 5 seconds. So what this is doing is basically checking the different servers and seeing how much time I'm spending in different servers. So the output here would look something like this. See, I've done 36 queries, and the average service time for the queries is this amount of seconds. Another thing I could look at, what's a SQL statement's been sent. In this case, I'm opening a file and I send the data to a file. So what I would look at that is I would basically see the SQL statements that have been generated by the container for me. So if I'm running a J2E application server, I don't write the SQL statements myself. I write them. The container is writing the SQL statements based on my definitions in my deployment descriptor or my code. So in here, I can actually see what the actual SQL that comes out is actually looking like. More information here are available on a few blogs. And that's the end. And we had a couple of questions.
Just like hear your thoughts on how Dtrace compares to Linux, wannabe lookalike system now.
I think that I would rather recommend you to read Adam's answer. In that discussion, that's been something I've been beaten to death a number of times between some of the system types guys and Adam Leventhal and Brian. So I would go to their blogs and read their responses to them. There are some differences in fundamental differences in how it's architectured in when it comes to safety and other things. I don't have that. I personally haven't looked at system types that much. I can't say I haven't played with it. I only looked at some of the design documents, but I haven't played with it in live, so I can't tell you some any live experience of it yet.
Can you say this is available in OpenStack?
Yeah. Okay. Anything in Solaris is available in open Solaris.
Okay. Is there a plugin for Eclipse?
If you mean a plugin for Eclipse, as you would get the graphical user interface from Eclipse, not that I'm aware of. There is some, we're playing with it into Sun Studio and NetBeans to sort of figure out how to do it. I actually think that Apple sort of done a good job in X-Ray, which is a dtrace function in their debugger in Xcode, which kind of is pretty cool. But dtrace, I'm trying to get the hands of myself around how do I write a GUI for dtrace. And I came to myself the conclusion is that I don't want to write dtrace GUI. I want to be able to take the questions I ask to the debugger or to the profiler, and then if dtrace can do a better job in getting that information out of the system, let's use dtrace to do that. Because dtrace is so flexible, so trying to write a GUI for dtrace, you just go crazy trying to figure out how to present the data. So it's kind of more of something I see as something you can use for when you have a set of questions and you can use dtrace to answer those questions.
Dtrace to get right down to things like page faults and things like
that. We have a VM provider that looks at those things specifically. You can do so one of the things that I usually show is like if you have a system that's running a lot of things, you can usually see which device that is the busy device, right? But you can't see which process is the process that is doing all of the IO to your disk. But with dtrace, we have done a command called iotop, which basically is top command with looking at IO instead, so we can actually see which process is doing that. We can look at, say that you have a shell script that's gone bad, so it's stuck in a loop that it spawns a lot of processes very, very quickly. And say that you're spawning like date or something like that, that would mean that the lifetime of that script, that spawn process, with less than 100 milliseconds, which means that it won't show up in your normal system accounting tools. So if you do PS or you're using TOP or something, it won't show up there. But if you look at VMstat, you will see that you're using 100% of your CPUs. And by using some simple dtrace script, like you can very quickly figure out, okay, that's that process that's spawning all those scripts.
So then to follow up on that, is there like a cookbook? Or
Oh, yeah. So there are two ways. There is a dtrace user guide, and if you download the dtrace user guide, there is in if you have a Solaris system on /user demo dtrace, all of the scripts that's referred to in the user guide are there. The other part is the dtrace toolkit. The dtrace toolkit has a lot of different scripts for systematic things, looking at processes, looking at virtual memory, looking at I/O, looking at Java, looking at JavaScript, looking at Perl, looking at PHP, and so on and forth. So that has a lot of scripts. And most likely, what you're looking at will most likely be available, or close to what you're interested in, will be available in the dtrace toolkit. So you can take the dtrace toolkit and you can tune the script there to do exactly what you're looking for. So for user applications, there are a number of different ways of doing things. So say that you have a C or C++ application, then we have a provider called the PID provider. And you can use the PID provider to instrument any function in your application, any function in a shared library that you're linking to your application. You can also instrument any offset into a function and see what's happening. So that's the basic what you can do with a PID provider. If you're running a job application, you can look at object allocation. You can look at method invocations. You can do object creations, object destructions, basically the object lifecycle. You can look at the garbage collection. You can look at the lifecycle of the virtual machine itself. A lot of other different things. So there are a lot of different things you can do in users per for looking at existing users per applications. Then we have something called user-defined static probes that you can define your own probes for your own applications. Today, it's limited to C, C++ application, but in Java 7, we will add that functionality to Java code as well. So what you can do then is we do what we've basically done for like Postgres, MySQL, for the Java virtual machine, and so on and so forth. So you can write instrumentation. You can run a write a provider for your own application that will generate, that will create data that is relevant for a user of your application. So that you saw in the Postgres, we looked at locking, we looked at queries, we can do timing on queries, we can look at lock contention, things like that, which is something that is interesting for a Postgres user to understand what's happening in the database. So the same thing in the JavaScript, we looked at object creation, we're looking at method invocation and things like that. Or function calls in JavaScript, which are interesting for a JavaScript developer, JavaScript applicator, JavaScript user. So you can create your own based provider for your own application.
Okay, my last question is, I noticed your slides has this wording embedded D functions. What does that mean? In your Postgres slide, it says that there are embedded D functions. So I'm not so sure what embedded means.
Embedded D functions. There's embedded D trace functions in I think what you're meaning are basically the deeper probes that we embedded into the Postgres code base. So these are the probes that you can use from D. So these are basically the functions that we've embedded into the Postgres engine to be able to extract information from the engine itself. Thank you very much.